Genesis 20. Are we finished 27? No, we haven't. We finished. We have finished down to 27 verse 30. So we're at the next segment of the 3-year cycle. So we have it's Shema time. This segment goes from Genesis 27:30 to Genesis 28:9.
We already heard that.
No, but you didn't. We didn't.
Why just memorize it, Liz?
I don't think we did. Maybe we did.
Yeah.
Well, we'll read again anyway.
You're a real good Shema.
We should make her memorize.
You wouldn't even need to read
Shema girl.
We're going to get tattooed on the back of your hand.
Uh-huh.
Heroes. No, just the Deuteronomy.
You know what the penalty is for blaspheming the Shema?
It's over for us.
Let me tell you what it is.
6 hours with burning.
It's called carpal tunnel syndrome.
It will smite your wrists.
See?
In your ankles?
No, no, no. And God knew that she was going to do it before she did it. And so he smote her.
Before they crawl and answer while they get speaking in the air.
What?
Serious.
Tarsal carpal.
He took Jackie's husband to Europe. That's what he did.
What did Jackie do?
Jackie was...
No, Liz was saying that because
does Liz have her head on backwards? I can't tell. Am I the only one that thought that?
I think so. Julie,
you are so
hateful. With Liz, you never can tell.
Jack thought it.
Something about it on your
head. Fred thought it.
Don't let him pull you into this, Jack.
See, if I read it.
Somebody help
her.
She doesn't
have
Jack's
that. Jack's so innocent.
Jack's a cool customer.
Harry! Kill him.
Would you
pay attention to this?
Harry made it to think that.
We're back.
Rick, we're supposed to be putting the whole side.
You're reading the Shema.
We're supposed to be dedicating our minds to God
to interrupt the Shema.
You made one of those sexual harassers.
Yeah, you did.
Dedicate your lives to God.
Okay. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house and when thou walkest by the way. And when thou liest down and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates.
What's the next one?
11:13-21. And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn, and thy wine, and thine oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and you turn aside, and serve other gods, and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, unless you perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. Therefore shall you lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall teach them your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in my house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. Numbers 15:37-41. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put upon the fringe of the borders a ribandous blue. And it shall be unto you for a fringe, that you may look upon it, and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and do them. And that you seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you used to go a whoring, that you may remember and do all my commandments, and be holy unto your God. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God.
The Shema, or Shema, is what it really is, it's a call to the elders. In that, if there is anything that is troubling anyone, then that's where the elders enter into the equation. Unless it's the rare thing that needs, if it can't be settled instantly by speaking, then the elders took the people outside. So the study of scriptures never became the process of anlandering, like it is in the other Bible studies. Right? What?
It's maybe there might be elders.
No, but then, and one of them, their elder is Steve. I mean, like, Steve.
Say no.
Huh?
Really?
Steve the elder.
So, no. Steve, I mean, that's probably, they used to say that about James, you know that?
That he was a prophet.
No, whenever he said, somebody said, can you imagine James as an elder?
He's just here because he's Jesus' brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on the haircut, they let him off.
Anyway, the blessedness is that I know these guys were just like we were. If I didn't know that, I'd be in deep trouble.
Yeah. Whole group of
jobs. But why is it that you should be concerned about this land, the land that was sworn unto the spiritual fathers to give us? The land is the inheritance. It's wider than the plain can cross. It's deeper than a well can dig. It's more blessed than any mind can conceive of. It's more real than anything that you could perceive or sense. It's more lasting than diamonds. It's more precious than all of the fine jewels in the universe. It's more It's more emotionally satisfying than that those first few moments or days when you fall in love. Now that's what the land is. That's your rightful inheritance. Now, Satan's trick is to try to get you the inheritance by an illegal means. His trick, literally, is try to get you from the world to the mercy seat or to the promise this way instead of this way. And oh, how ready you are to go from there to there.
Amen.
You'll believe a lie. You'll believe the God of this world, Satan sends a strong delusion so that you would believe a lie to go from here to here this way. It's hard to understand that nothing about God is optional. There's no optionality. There's no degrees of rightness or wrongness. There's no degree of sin. You know, the thing that's become a cliche now, but everyone prays 24 hours a day. Everyone is religious. God, nobody cares what the words that come out of your mouth. Everybody tithes 10%. You do it to your chief God. Everybody makes the first fruit offering. Everybody makes the burnt offering. You just make it the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong God, with the wrong thing. Other than that, it's... But you understand... Tithing is optional. The human being is a spiritual phenomenon, and the spirit tithes. You tithe 10% to your chief God. Now, most times, it's yourself. Why do you think that they had all these strange animals like bulls and rams and that were the sacrifices? It's because they lived in that age, the age of Capricorn or the age of Taurus. We live in the age of Aquarius, or dawning of the age of Aquarius, so our God is a fish. But really what that signifies is we haven't yet entered the age of Aquarius. The song, "The Dawning of the Age of Aquarius," is right, but it hasn't started yet, because we are still in the position where the first star, the first constellation that's seen on the evening of the spring equinox is what defines what age you're in. The age that we're still in is the age of Pisces. It's the age of that life, the true life, is hidden under the water. It's the age in which, of Pisces, the waters of judgment. It's the age when Christ said, because of that, I'll make you fishers of men. But what happens when you catch a fish? If I catch a fish, I pull that Pisces out of the water and create a new thing or die. You understand? The fish dies. To be a fisher of men doesn't go around, I mean, it means you have to kill the friggin' fish. Is that clear? Now, so the dawning, we're in the dawning, the cusp of the age of Aquarius. But you know what the ancients said of the age of Aquarius? At the beginning of the age, this isn't from the Bible. This is from the Zend Avesta. This is from the ancient holy books. At the beginning of the age of Aquarius, the natural world will end and only spirit will remain. Well, where? Huh?
Which one's Aquarius?
The water.
Water.
Rivers of living water. Out of you shall flow the rivers. The eight. I mean, that's what he's talking about.
When does it begin?
Pisces.
When is it?
Well, it's in.
Good luck. How long do we have?
We've never been in it before.
I can measure this by the hour.
No. Listen to me carefully. This is what brought Abraham to repentance. Abraham had been taught the mysteries of the universe. And the god of the age that he was in was Capricorn. Because in that, and it was two, and the, that, that age is 2,000 years long. You understand? Each of the ages, each of the 12 signs of the zodiac are approximately 12. Yeah. Approximately two, each of the total sign of the Aquarius is about 25,000 years. So each of the 12 signs are around about 2,000 years. And each of the signs of the zodiac is about 2,000 years. Excuse me. Abraham was called out of Ur at the beginning, the dawning of the age of Taurus. He went from the age of Capricorn, where the goat was the goat head and all that, to the age of Taurus. And he looked and he saw, he said, all every other time at the dawning of that and the first constellation, the spring equinox, it's the last that's seen in the evening, for all those 2,000 years before, was Capricorn. And it was the most constant, the consistent thing in the universe. Can you understand that? Mm-hmm. Everything else changed. Then he lived at that dawning, that changed. And he looked out the next year and looked out there. And it was no longer the first constellation seen. Now it was Taurus. At this time, in all of the ancient temples, they changed gods. From Capricorn to Taurus. But they weren't dumb enough to... I mean, we believe it, we read ancient history, we think they're reading, they're worshiping. They're not worshiping some idiot bull. That was the age that represented self. Do you understand? Think of these things. Just a minute.
Wasn't there also a change when Christ was on the cross?
Oh, yeah. When Christ was born, in fact. We're going to talk about that. So at Abraham, it went from Capricorn to Taurus. At the birth of Christ, it went from Taurus to Pisces. Right now, it's going from Pisces to Aquarius. I mean, even as we speak, what I'm saying to you is right now, this is another view, another, you understand, another parable, another picture of the truth. But any moment, literally, any moment could be the legal dawning of the age. Now, no man knoweth the day or the hour because of this, the cusp and the you can't tell that carefully. Now, all of the ancient astrologers, the idea that an astrologer would cast an individual's chart would be a blasphemy. This astrology started as only the path that showed in the heavens the purpose of God in the universe, and the purpose of the universe in God. And it showed clearly, if you follow it, again, for those of you who study this, you know there's about a jillion hundred takes in there, but that the only two structures that predate the flood on the face of the earth are the pyramid and the Sphinx. And the purpose of the Sphinx, it predates the flood, and it's just found, by the way, they just carbon dated it, they found it was 6,000 some years old. The purpose of the Sphinx is to show that the beginning is at Virgo, the head of the woman, and the ending is at Leo, the body of Lion. Otherwise, you wouldn't know where to start and begin, because it's a circle in the heavens. And that silent witness of the Sphinx contains all the mystery, because it's the key to know the signs of the zodiac. Now, the signs of the zodiac, first then, they were only to show the purpose of God in the universe, and the purpose of the universe in God. Then the first step of denigration was that it began, the kings apprehended it, and the kings said that the purpose of this is to the purpose of the signs of the zodiac are to show what's going to happen to our kingdom. Then the next level of the kingdom is itself. Then the next generation denigration was that the king said, no, it's not for them, they're for the land, it's for me. And slowly the royalty of the community or of the nation said that, no, it's for all of us. And finally it's denigrated down to it's an instrument of self-realization. The same as the alphabet. The purpose of the alphabet and its origin was to show this mystery of Christ in you, the hope of glory. All alphabets. The idea that the moving vowel points that's another whole other story. But everything gets denigrated back down to self-realization. The salvation of the isolated self is the lowest form of revelation. It's the bottom of the totem pole. Can you hear that? And so that's why Christ said, to be his disciple, the first thing that has to be done is you have to abandon any concern whatsoever for self. Throw me in the pits of hell, and I'll love you anyway. Make it known to me that I am not worthy to be accounted to number as a paving stone on the gates of heaven, and I'll still continue exactly what I'm doing. You understand? Because that's the only way you can have any enjoyment or fulfillment now. If you're worried about being fulfilled in the future, you will never be fulfilled. That's the promise. If there's anything in your life that needs to happen in order for fulfillment to take place, then you've started downward on this denigration of revelation. Now, how did I get in there?
I don't know.
The Shema. The Shema's purpose is to set aside, shut up, Lee. The Shema's purpose is to set aside self.
That's right. We started with the beauty of the land, and we had to generate into pipe three or whatever.
You ever noticed how much? Well, that the wilderness is the same shape as the uterus.
What?
More denigration.
Actually, you can get it. Somebody
I didn't think we could go any lower.
Israel was born
defending God.
You think of low
further denigration.
There's
the Nile, the big
Philippine
Jew.
We
get to enjoy that.
Genesis 27. Read Genesis 27, verse 30. Start reading, Harry. Read quickly. Whatever you do, must do to it. Remember? Every time it says, and it came to pass, it's what?
Really bad.
What?
Really bad.
What?
Really bad.
If we did, we weren't supposed to.
We went too far last time.
And it came to
pass. We're supposed to end at Genesis 27:29, the actual reading section.
What's the answer to your question?
What?
Could be either really good or really bad.
Every time it says in the Bible, and it came to pass, it means that what's going to follow is really, really good or really, really bad. It's a momentous event.
And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. And
why is this bad?
Because Esau thinks it's deception.
Because it's going to take Isaac, or the promise, 14 years before he can get back to the promise. He's going to be in a state of testing for 14 years.
Is Jacob too
wise? Jacob. Now, keep your hand there. Now go to Galatians 1.
I mean, is there some significance to the number 14?
Too wise.
That's what we're going to, Galatians 1. Just shut up, Liz. Damn women.
I know, I used to be
It's not a very sensitive thing to say.
So he's drawing
him
out now.
Maybe critical.
So what was that about? How
sensitive. It's like being the merciless. Was it? I'm looking for.
Were you the woman? I did.
Was he on his way to the house?
Who is taking it the hardest?
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Who is it bugging the most?
Fall on your sword.
It's bothering Harry the most.
Okay. Chapter 1, verse 6, Galatians. I marvel that you are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel, or a different gospel, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. The word accursed there is heavy duty. There's three levels of being accursed, and it's hard to tell because the translators translate them all three words the same. But the three levels of accursedness are one's for 30 days, one's for 90 days, and one's forever. This one is the one forever. Accursed means you're outside the pale of the influence of God and the brethren forever. You're outside of the influence of Jesus Christ forever.
Like outer darkness.
Okay? As we have said before, so now I say again, so say I now again, if any man or any preach any other gospel unto you than that you have received, let him be accursed. Now what's the difference? His first time he said that has been preached unto you, and the second time he said that you have received. The idea of receiving it means it was different from when you got it preached to you. Do you understand that? The receiving of it happened on the day of Pentecost. You and all men, the gospel was received by all men on the day of Pentecost. The seed of Christ was shed on all flesh in the day of Pentecost. So you then are alike a pecan or a wheat or some kind of a seed that's covered. And what has to happen for it to be revealed is there has to be a brokenness. And then more brokenness. You ever thought about your identity of a seed as if you're planted?
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that when you're talking about fish. After the fish dies, you put it in a hole in the ground so the seed can be fertile.
That's right.
You know what I just say? The cat and dogs caught a baby squirrel and killed it. So I had to go to the garden.
Bury it.
And I had to bury it. It was really weird. The reason had a weird effect.
Now remember this. The question was, what about the 14 years? Remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Who asked that question?
Liz. Over there.
It's a dumb question.
One of them damn women.
It's a dumb question.
I think it's hilarious.
Well, then why are you answering?
I'm not.
There you have it.
His answer was, it's a dumb question.
As we have said before, so now I say again, if any man preach any other gospel unto him than that you have received, let him be accursed. Now the test is, for do I persuade men or God? Listen to this carefully.
Wow.
Or do I seek to please men? For if I yet pleased men, I should not be the servant of Christ. It's impossible. That's mutually exclusive. But I certify you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached of me is not after man. For I neither received it of man, neither was I taught it, but by the revelation of Jesus Christ. For you have heard of my conversation in time past, or in the manner of life, in time past in the Jews' religion, how that beyond measure I persecuted the church of God and wasted it. I can tell you war stories, but you know what I used to do? I was a reasonably good hypnotist by the time I was 12. By the time I was 18, I was an excellent hypnotist. We had these guys that were these kind of believers that you've all seen. And I'd give them a glass of water and hypnotize them and tell them it was whiskey. And they'd get drunk on their butts. I mean, I delighted in persecuting. Why? I mean, you know, it makes me sick. Why would I do that? I spent a lot of time doing it. I persecuted the church of God and wasted it, and profited in the Jews' religion above many my equals in mine own nation, being more exceedingly zealous of the traditions of my fathers. But when it pleased God who separated me from my mother's womb, in other words, he was called by God for this purpose from before his mother's womb, and everything that happened to him up till that point was exactly as it should be, even the wasting of the church of God. And called me by his grace to reveal his son in me that I might preach him among the heathen. Immediately I conferred not with flesh and blood, neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles before me, but I went into Arabia and returned again into Damascus. Then after 3 years I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and abode with him 15 days. But other of the apostles saw I none, save James the brother of the Lord. Now these things which I write unto you, behold, before God I lie not. Afterward I came into the regions of Syria and Cilicia, and was unknown by the face unto the churches of Judea which were in Christ. But they had heard only that he which persecuted us in times past now preached the faith which once he destroyed, and they glorified God in me. Then 14 years after I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and took Titus with me also. It was 14 years before he preached. It was 21 years before he wrote the first letter that's recorded. Now that time is this time of perfecting, of testing, of the seed falling into the ground and dying. Modern religion loves the testimonies of new believers because they're so sweet. Yeah, they're cotton candy. God hates the testimony of new believers because it's untested. I gave a speech at a Bible college. And they were getting ready to go down and save New Orleans on the Mardi Gras. And I told him to stay home. Don't you see that the basis of false faith always believes it needs converts? You know that the Great Commission, go ye into all the world, is in the aorist tense in the Bible? You know that? That means that it's not a command. It says, as you go into the world, make disciples. Now, a freshman Greek can see that in reading the Bible. But what has happened? It's like a conspiracy to make it the great command. Go, go, go before you're ready. Huh?
The Great Commission.
Why? But it isn't, you see. The Great Commission of God. Don't you understand? If God wanted the world saved the way they think they saved the world, he'd blazon his name in neon lights across the sky.
God doesn't get commission because he knows it.
Amen. I'm not talking about these people's sincerity. Except I've interviewed a whole bunch of them. And they really, you know, there's this great book called Lost Christianity. I've told most of you about it. But it's got this, the writer, some muckety muck, he's like a cardinal. But he's a leader, one of the biggest leaders of the church. And this interviewer goes and meets him at his office. And he's busting him. And he says, "Man, I never thought I'd get to see you. Don't you know that all of the real leaders of the world's religions are up at so-and-so, and they're receiving the real meaning of life?" And the guy says, "Oh my God, where is it? Where is it? I gotta go." I mean, can you imagine anything more ludicrous than going to a conference to learn about God?
The meaning of what convention?
I mean, we learn about God by laying down our life. We learn about God by giving up the right to ourselves. We learn about God by emptying ourselves. So that what was gained to me is a loss to Christ. 14 years before he spoke, really. That's what's going to happen to Laban. I mean, that's going to happen by Laban, by the hand of Laban, to Jacob. Genesis 27.
I was thinking that Laban is the worst boss.
Okay, let's go back there. Genesis 27. Does everybody understand? By the rules that we're barely getting started right now. The body has been together for just over 14 years. If that's, you know, maybe something's about to happen.
Weird.
You never can tell.
Don't say it.
What'd she say?
Hold for 21.
She's got. She can make it as an elder.
Yeah. Oh, don't make any trouble.
I just don't think you should be that. Not that.
You should be nicer, Ollie. You should be nicer, Ollie.
God, how long have I heard that?
And you still tell me?
Yeah, this. You
know. Yeah, still not all this time. Yeah, he's nicer. Yeah. Relative.
Much nicer.
That's
right.
Good
old Myra. Nice.
Thank God.
That's right.
Thank God.
That's right.
That's true.
Community.
Can we get back?
Pretty
hairy, cuddly.
Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting, and he also had made savory meat and brought it unto his father, and said unto his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me." And Isaac,
again, do you see that? Remember eating of the venison. It's. It means eating the venison. I mean, I'm sure this occasion happened, but in the Hebrew language, it means, let me partake of your successes. Let me partake. What does a father want from a son? The father wants nothing from the son but to eat of his flesh. The father wants the son to be successful so that he can gain sustenance from saying, "That's my son." The son wants sustenance from the father so he can say, "I'm proud of you, that's my father, I'm going to eat, and look, my father is doing this, what's your father?" Do you understand? That's flesh eating. So that's what the difference here is, and I want you to see it, that Jacob refused, he didn't have anything to eat in the flesh. He was a total failure by the standards of his father, by the standards of his father's gods. But Esau, he ate of his son's venison. He ate of the, he consumed that which was the result of his son's chase. Am I communicating?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know how it goes. I mean, you just have a little gorge, a little less. Let's all go to the in-laws and let's gorge on the baby. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Then pretty soon, what happens? the baby can't meet their standards. And pretty soon they, I mean, it's just, how can you do that to me?
So they have another one.
The grandparent stuff. Okay. Maybe the grandparents.
And Isaac, his father, said unto him, Who art thou? And he said, I'm thy son, thy firstborn, Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, Who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it me? And I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry, and said unto his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, Thy brother came with subtlety, and hath taken away thy blessing. And he said, Is not he rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing. And he said, Hast thou not reserved a blessing for me?
That's our plaintive, I can't say that word. That's our mournful cry to God as flesh. Please, God, reserve a blessing for me. Let me worry about my salvation. Let me worry about whether I'm going to be happy. There's no blessing for the flesh. There's no blessing for your perception of yourself. Why? Because you are your father, the devil. And without the cross, you're lost. And then after the cross, there's only the bride. There's no individual. So the test is, the test of whether you've seen the cross is whether or not your concern is for the individual or the body. Not just this little body here, but the body universal. The body universal in time and out of time.
And Isaac answered and said unto Esau, Behold, I have made him thy lord, and all his brethren have I given to him for servants. And with corn and wine have I sustained him. And what shall I do now unto thee, my son? And Esau said unto his father, Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth, and of the dew of heaven from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live. Shall serve thy brother, and it shall come to pass when thou shalt have the dominion that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck.
What does that mean?
It's heavy.
It's not a good thing. It means that at Christ, the yoke of Esau was broken off. I mean, the yoke of Jacob was broken off the neck of Esau. It could never be put back on. It could never. In other words, that was the last chance. At the cross was the last chance that man had to be saved. Okay? Can you hear that?
And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob.
Okay, now. In verse 39, Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth. Thy dwelling, I mean, in other words, all he has are the senses. That's all. And the fatness of the earth is subject to entropy. It's subject to constant denigration. Constant getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Every relationship goes from good to bad. Nothing after the flesh can be saved. It has to go down. It has to be destroyed. Okay.
And these words we saw, her elder son, were told to Rebekah, and she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, said unto him, Behold, thy brother Esau is touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee.
Now, do you understand that you are, there, again, Esau's purpose in you is to kill that which can be useful of God, Jacob. He's suppressed, the flesh is trying to suppress down the spirit. The spirit is trying to suppress down the flesh, so you cannot do the things that you would want to do. The battle hasn't been enjoyed. If the battle hasn't been enjoined, then you haven't started the process yet, I promise you. You hear me?
Is this something kind of mystical here? When Esau says it in his heart, and it was told unto Rebekah, like, God told her or something? Or was he bragging to somebody else? And
no, I think Rebekah saw. I mean, Rebekah, in order for the mysticism, is Rebekah here is the type of the mother. When it says, honor thy father and the mother, it may be well with thee. The scripture, you know, Christ didn't honor his mother or his, you know, natural father. He honored only the Father which is in heaven, and he honored only the mother, the brethren. He said, his mother came to see him, he said, that's not my mother or my brother. Call no man on earth father, call no woman on earth mother. So, Rebekah here is the type of the discernment and words of wisdom, words of knowledge of the body. Okay? We've seen that happen a million times. You don't necessarily like it very much when it's happening, but... Huh. Show us your face.
Yes, dear.
Oh, spaghetti. Let's see that again.
Is
that you're
going to
go for
his
hat
for
Halloween?
She's going
to get herself.
She's going to get
herself.
High place,
low
place.
A little high place
humor here.
I think I'll go as myself.
No one has ever seen that before.
Oh, now! Stop it.
Putrefying
story. Thy brother Esau is touching thee and doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. And arise, flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran.
Okay. Laban, now, it isn't going to be a good deal. Yeah, this does not look, this doesn't look.
Go to your uncle's house.
Go to your uncle. Uncle. Okay.
And tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury. Until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him. That'll just take a few days. Then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do?
Who are the daughters of Heth?
Well, they're Esau's wives.
Esau married them, right?
Yeah, but they're the daughters of, Esau married. But
they're Gentiles.
The people around.
Canaanites.
They're, wherever you are, they're the daughters of
Israel. Why was she afraid for her life?
Huh?
Why was she...
Well, his life would not. If
she
didn't she would have no purpose. If,
I should kill myself.
If he had no purpose in life.
You could have died.
He just got wet.
God did drive me. Oh, no, that wasn't just. I mean, this may be years apart. Okay?
You don't got a choice.
Jacob, Esau, and the third brother, Shlomo.
Shlomo.
Keep reading.
Shlomo.
Wait.
It's the third brother.
Jacob, Esau, and Shlomo.
They all dwell somewhere in their end.
He was a little
slow. He already said he was a piece of furniture because he moved in Shlomo.
They all dwell in this vessel. He was
a little slow.
Who's reading?
I am. Keep
reading.
And Isaac
reading?
Called Jacob and blessed him.
Listen. We're going to go through verse 9.
Okay. And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him for it.
Time out. Rick, would you read?
I wanted to read one more line.
Rick, would you read?
Just one more line.
No.
What are you going to say here right now?
Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan.
So there.
Arise, go to Pandan and Amaram. The house of Bethuel, thy mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother. And God Almighty bless thee, and make thee fruitful, and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people, and give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee, and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which God gave unto Abraham. And Isaac sent away Jacob, and he went to Padan Aram.
Padan Aram,
unto Laban, son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob's and Esau's mother. When Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away
to that place,
to Padan Aram, to take him a wife from this, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob obeyed his father and mother, and was gone to Padan Aram. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael, and took unto the wives which he had Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abram's son, the sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife.
Now that was brilliant. Esau didn't do good.
He's trying to suck up now.
But he's always trying to do the right thing. You see, you got to notice this in Esau. Just like Cain and Abel. Cain was making, he was always sincere, always making the sacrifice.
Yeah. Worked his ass off.
Worked his little buns off.
What?
Another
guilty man
that ever
sins,
I don't know,
I don't do there.
Yeah, you just like,
why
really
do you think he killed
yourself? Mm-hmm.
You, of all people.
Who?
Liz. Okay.
That's it.
That's it.
Oh. That's it. That's the reading.
That's the reading.
That's the reading. We finished a week's of worth of reading in one night almost.
With no understanding, but
huh?
Totally devoid of understanding. But we
well, this is how the other groups keep up.
I know that.
Yes. That's the
we're not behind.
Are we current yet?
We're not behind. It's just that because of the denigration of man, the three-year cycle now takes about 30, 35 years.
30, 35.
Five, I figure.
Tally told that for
I figure we're going to be done around 2020.
Yeah. What?
Tally told that for 21.
We can do a TV show.
She's going for 21. Okay, let's go to Malachi.
Every 7 years we do it.
I'm sorry, not Malachi. Micah.
Micah.
Okay. Does everybody remember?
No.
Harry, Jim, Amy, Ollie, and Johnny may never have zucchini. Yeah. However, zombies might.
Yeah, but you don't remember it either.
But what does that tell us? Does that tell us where we're going?
Yeah.
Are we going to Micah?
I just did it.
Micah.
It doesn't help me find Micah.
1358. Lucas, Micah. 960 and mine. Sorry, one page off. Crystal,
it's
1096. Well, Lucas. We are supposed to read just Isaiah 5, 1, excuse me, 7 through 13. I mean, Micah, excuse me, 5, 7 through 13. But let's start in verse 5, 1, and go through 6, 5. No, let's go to 6, 8. Micah 5, 1 through 6, 8. That will be our required 20-some verses. Crystal, would you like to read?
Yes. She always reads.
You're right.
Now gather thyself in troops, O daughter of troops. You have laid the siege against us. They shall smite the judge of Israel with the rod upon the cheek. But thou, Bethlehem, Ephratah.
They want to smoke their sister.
Though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall come forth unto me that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from old, from everlasting.
Okay, that's where Bethlehem Ephrata is where this is the prophecy of Christ, that out of Bethlehem shall Messiah come, whose going forth has been from the everlasting, from old. In other words, and the word there is from Olam. It means he's been, it's been from the vanishing point. The word olam, or forever, doesn't mean long time in the future or everlasting. It means the vanishing point. And that's a hard concept to get to, but it's because of our language's way of teaching you about time. It's not that hard in Hebrew, but the vanished is forever isn't a long time in the future or everlasting or where you're going to go in heaven. Forever is no time at all. It's the word olam, the vanishing point. What that means is all men died at the same instant. At the vanishing point, they all died on the cross. That's why the thieves could say with Jesus, Jesus could say to the thief, "Today you shall be with me in paradise." Why? Because the only day, Jesus went down to the depths for 3 days, according to our calculations. But he could yet say to the thief on the cross that today you shall be with me in paradise. Why? Because it was the same day. It was out of time. You understand? Forever doesn't mean you got to. Your mind says forever. What am I going to do? Forever. Time's going to. It doesn't mean that. It means no time. It'll blow your circuits when you see the implications of that. Who's reading? Crystal.
Therefore will he give them up until the time that which she travaileth hath brought forth. Then the remnant of his brother, of his brethren, shall return unto the children of Israel. And he shall stand and feed in the strength of the Lord, and the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall abide. For now shall he be great unto the ends of the earth. And this man shall be the peace, when the Assyrian shall come into our land, and when he shall tread in our palaces. Then shall we raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 principal men, and they shall waste the land of Assyria with the sword, and the land of Nimrod and the entrances thereof. Thus shall he deliver us from the Assyrian when he cometh into our land and when he treadeth into our borders, within
our borders. Now why are we reading this? Remember the section is on Jacob. So remember the remnant of Jacob is what we're studying. We want to see from the beginning what takes place in the end. So now the reading is from 5, 7 through 13. So the next verse then defines the reading. Okay? Get that?
And the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many people.
Now, the 3-year cycle, I mean, the readings, what we determine our readings, are started 500 B.C., 440, 450 BC. And they started in Babylon. The readings, the selection of the readings as we study them from the law, the writings, and the prophets, were selected by Nehemiah and Ezra. They are the ones that made the determinations. We know with a certainty that this is how Christ studied the scriptures. We know that for this day, you know, if we were up to date, we'd know exactly what day of the week it was, what time of the year. But if for this day that they read from that Genesis, that Torah, this is the prophet section that Christ studied with his disciples. And that's an incredible thing to know.
And the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many people as the dew from the Lord, as the showers upon the grass that tarrieth not for man. No, waited for the sons of men.
Okay, I hear that. It's as the dew. It's the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many people, as the dew from the Lord. Now, what about this thing about the dew? We study the dew, you know, when we sing Psalm 133 for the Psalms of Ascent, but. What happens? It just sort of appears. I mean, it has nothing to do with this thing called the dew point and humidity and temperature and all kinds of mysterious weather stuff. But
it's there, you just can't say
it. It just appears. And it says that the remnant of Jacob shall be the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many people as a dew from the Lord, as the showers upon the grass. Tarrieth not for man, nor waiteth for the sons of men. The idea is that the remnant of Jacob doesn't have a great deal to do with men or the sons of men. You understand? You've been deceived. You've tried to find sustenance and peace and joy in concerning yourself with the things of men and the sons of men, and all it got you is misery. Okay.
And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many people, as a lion among the beasts of the forest.
Okay. That's what's happening. I mean, when the revelation is manifested, as it's starting to become in us, after, I mean, it's 14 years, then it becomes as a, it's gone from this nice sort of innocent passive dew on a leaf. Now we got a lion wandering around. I mean, it's pretty. Huh? And the lion, the definition of, remember we taught this, the definition, the spiritual definition of meekness is this lion wandering around. He doesn't take your throat off.
Here he
does. Huh? Well, he's going to take it off in a minute here, but meekness is, okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
As a young lion among flocks of sheep, who, if he go through, both treadeth down and teareth in pieces, and none can deliver.
Yeah.
Thine hand shall be lifted up.
See, the if is, that defined the if. Do you hear me? This did still define the meekness, because he had the power to do that and didn't. It's if he'd do it.
Thine hand shall be lifted up upon thine adversaries, and all thine enemies shall be cut off. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Lord, that I will cut off thy horses out of the midst of thee, and I will destroy thy chariots. And I will cut off the cities of thy land, and throw down all thy strongholds. And I will cut off witchcrafts out of thine hand, and thou shalt have no more soothsayers.
Amen.
Thy graven images also will I cut off, and thy standing images out of the midst of thee. And thou shalt no more worship the work of thine hands. And I will pluck up thy groves out of the midst of thee, so will I destroy thy cities. And I will execute vengeance and anger and fury upon the heathen, such as they have not heard.
Okay, what we've seen the thing of Jacob, and he's just starting his stuff. Because nothing could happen in Jacob until he's separated from Esau. Now he's going to go up, and he's going to spend 14 years with Laban, and then he's going to have the revelation on his way.
Yeah, once he comes back.
He comes back with a fox.
A fabulous babe.
Yes.
And a maid.
And a nursemaid.
14 years of bullshit.
Huh?
And it's worth 14 years.
Barry, you don't need to go any further.
I don't know what you said, but you need to go hit Tylene.
What did she say?
There's no telling, but you just got to go hit her. Okay.
Hear ye now what the Lord saith. Arise, contend thou before the mountains, and let the hills hear thy voice. Hear ye, O mountains, the Lord's controversy, and ye strong foundations of the earth. For the Lord hath a controversy with his people, and he will plead with Israel. O my people, what have I done?
You know what the word plead there is? He will argue. Have you ever tried to win an argument with God?
Yes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that's just as
I've tried.
What?
I've tried, yes.
Did you ever win?
Prove it, God.
Jack's still trying to argue with God.
Show me, buddy.
I was like, well, I don't hope to win.
Oh, okay. He just thinks it's a thing to do for a while.
I'll just do this for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my people, what have I done unto thee? And wherein have I wearied thee? Testify against me. For I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, and redeemed thee out of the house of servants. And I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Oh, my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, consulted, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him from Shittim, from Gilgal, that ye may know the righteousness of the Lord. Wherewith shall I come before the Lord, and bow myself before the high God? What shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He hath shown thee, O man, what is good, and what doeth the Lord require of thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God.
Okay, that's it.
Wow, cool.
Did Jacob, because of what he did, have to work through some guilt?
Big time.
I never saw that. That's incredible.
No. What that last thing, it says, he has showed me, O man, what is good, and what doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. That's a bad translation, to walk humbly with thy God, because it means, what it really says is to humble yourself, to walk with God. Now, what does that mean?
That sounds like Simon the Cyrenian. Carried the cross.
Yeah. But it's really what it is, it's the acceptance of every moment as from the proffered hand of God, without any murmuring or without any attempts to change what is happening. That's how you humble yourself to walk before the face of God. That's wild thought. Now, so what is it? What's this? We got a big pyramid here. We got the 613 laws of Moses. That's so many. If you want to count them someday, you can do that. There are 613 laws of Moses. There are 248 positive commands, 365 negative commands, or vice versa. Vice versa, excuse me, vice versa. It corresponds to the numbers. There are 248 bones in the body, and there's 365 days of the year. And that intimacy of that is that it's a complete cycle in you. Then it goes from that 613 laws of Moses. Then it says that you meet all of those 613 laws of Moses if you meet the Ten Commandments. In other words, the Ten Commandments say the same things as the 613 laws. Then the pyramid goes up now to the next point, and the next point is this. The three goes from 613 to 10 to 3. And here it's, he has showed me, O man, what is it, what the Lord require of thee, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to humble yourself, to walk with thy God. So that goes now to 3. Then it goes to the 1. What's the 1? What's the great commandment? And your neighbor. But the evidence, the implication is, the only way the evidence that is that you'll love your neighbor as yourself.
And that one encompasses everything in the pyramid.
Everything in the pyramid.
And that one, by definition, is the chief cornerstone.
And it's the fulfillment of all the law. And in fact, he is the chief cornerstone. He's the cap. The cornerstone isn't. The word cornerstone is the cap of the pyramid. That's what it means. Okay? Excuse me. Anybody have anybody want to have a contention down here? Contend with me. See, that's why I want a radio. I want a talk show because I want some people to contend.
Yeah, usually people when they call in on those shows, the stuff they contend with is so y'all.
No, I'd hang up on them.
People would call with demons.
No, I would. First of all, we'd have somebody that scream. We'd have people somebody screen the call so that anybody that has something interesting to say that was a worthy adversary would get on the air.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then I hang up at everybody. I need to talk about one thing before we go. There are at least 12 people, more than that really, but 12 that are active drug addicts, crack cocaine addicts, or active alcoholics. And it's becoming really, it's becoming a circus around here. We started this morning teaching on the meaning of alcohol and the meaning of drugs in terms of what it does to you and how it, I mean, gotta care if you're going to get drunk or use all the drugs in the world, but you're stupid because the alcohol is this, received by the same receptors as the Holy Spirit is, and so if you're taking alcohol, you're stopping the Holy Spirit. And the drugs are taking up the receptors that cause you to have a sense of joy and well-being and contentment. And there are many, many different manifestations. And if you're taking the drugs, then you're inhibiting God from knowing the joy and contentment and peace of God. So, I mean, it's stupid to take the drugs and the alcohol. But more importantly, and we read it tonight, that he's going to remove the witchcraft from among us. The word witchcraft there is pharmakia,
in the Septuagint. And which drugs and witchcraft are the same. And so what you do when you take drugs is you open yourself up to this very, you it's fairly thick if you, you know, if you don't believe in them, you don't give them any importance, you don't pay attention to them. But when you start either fearing them or worshiping them or giving offerings to them, then the spirit world gets very thin. It's the same principle as the higher you go up a mountain, the thinner the air gets. And so when you're on drugs, it's a very thin separation and sometimes a rip between you and the demon world. And it's a real world, and you're a fool if you don't think it is. And so that's where this... I think there's a few Levites that are walking around in great fear this evening, I hope. But bottom line is, we have a tape or several tapes on the meaning of drugs, and if any of you are interested, you ought to get and see Harry to get some copies made.
And there's a real scary tape on demons too.
Oh, that's that same tape.
Oh, is it
that one tape? Yeah, one.
Yeah, because I listened to it on
the. We like to call it the Rick tape.
Oh, you know, I meant to talk about this. I've been having trouble sleeping at night. Because Ed and I went down to 7-Eleven, and
it was weird. Somebody rushed in there and said, somebody's got a gun in the parking lot there, firing it around. Shit. And I don't think the guy did, but he's acting crazy, you know.
These kids were throwing, like, beer bottles at him and stuff, and then he took off chasing them, and it was just, it, I don't know, it just made me feel, since Elisa's been gone, I felt a little... funny being there by myself.
Well, why not, like, Jackie, go stay with Jackie, or Jackie come over here and stay at night, or
stay at my house.
Stay with, vice versa. I mean, just get somebody to stay with you. It's a fear that, the promise of God is sudden fear shall not come upon you, that the fear of you and the dread of you will be on every creature. Fear is not, it's only a temporary thing of discipling, so don't worry about it. Don't give it any breath.
I'll come over and read you vegetable stories.
Don't fear the fear. Embrace the fear.
When I start doing that, when I start thinking about somebody could come, I carried out, okay, someone came in, you know, and they did this and this and this, and I thought, you know, would that mean that I was cut off? Would that mean, I mean, what is the end of the fear? Even if that happened, would that mean that, you know, that God didn't care about me, or that, you know, that God wasn't in it or whatever? And that's, you know, I have to accept, you know, instead of isolating that kind of situation out, I have to accept that, because I would get killed in a car accident, or because, you know, that he's causing everything, and if it did happen, it would be him too, and I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So, why
worry? But the promise of God is he's not going to put anything more on you than you can bear. Mm-hmm. So, that's the rest. That's why you can afford to rest. And you can command, you have the authority to command your soul to be at rest. People forget that, because people really, you know, it's like, man, if I didn't have this angst, if I didn't have this angst and fear, I wouldn't have any personality at all.
Yeah, I could have the pig removed, but what would I do then?
Yeah, you know, it's like, I was doing that, and then my mind went, and it went, you know, sometimes your worst fears can come upon you, and you say that a lot, and I thought, oh, maybe he can do this to me,
Well, then you say, Father, forgive me.
Said that. I'm really having a massive confusion about prayer. I've gone round and round and round and round. You know, I used to be where everybody used to be. You'd kneel down and do the worshipful thing. All
the worshipful thing.
Now, the way I understand seems totally right. That, I mean, you're always praying because you're always in communion with the Spirit. Can you take it from there? I mean, is there more to it than
you're supposed to be confused. Just rest where you are, because all of the imagery you've had about prayer, and really, what most of what has been taught in the name of prayer, is a cult, because all of the occult phenomena. They use it's the Lord's Prayer in reverse. It starts with the amen, and the amen is what you want. You understand? So, it's the Lord teaches to pray. He said, pray in like this manner, and it's a mind-blowing concept, because he says, no, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day tomorrow's bread, the bread of life. I mean, so what, rather, that's the meaning of the prayer, and it's a mind-blowing prayer. Now, you know, that's in opposition to the, you know, we have evidence that the SS in Hitler's day, it was a 3-year training program, and it was a big monster thing. One of the things they did is they gave everybody a German Shepherd puppy when they entered into the training. We went to the castle. I mean, we shot in the castle that they were there training. Every single day for that 3-year period, they said the Lord's Prayer in reverse. And then, at the end of the 3 years, after they'd nurtured the pup and trained it and everything, they had to slit its throat in the front of the ceremony as a ceremonial thing in order to graduate from the SS. And they became, the SS were priests, high priests of Hitler, was totally and completely immersed in the occult. I mean, everything about him is occult. So, the fact that you've, what's really happening is you've stopped learning the Lord's Prayer in reverse. Yeah. So rest in the fact. Oh, it's a crisis.
Because you feel like you oughta.
It's a crisis. It's because you think, you begin to think in obligatory terms. But I promise you, if you rest, that he'll see you through the crisis. And there will be greater and greater and greater revelation of the meaning of prayer. Prayer isn't begging. The prayer in the world is begging.
With you, me, dear God.
Make you a deal, God.
If you're there.
Speaking of satanic stuff, I was with the vets the other day. We were talking about Halloween and cruelty to animals and all that stuff. And the vet assistant who was doing this vaccination said that they, few weeks ago, they'd gotten this dog, and these satanic worshippers had just slashed completely down the side of this dog. The dog had been abducted from its home and taken to this house. They had spray painted petting grounds and all this satanic stuff on the side of this house. They just slashed down the side of this dog to bleed it, just to get blood for satanic rituals. It's like,
but it come in.
What on earth could the people found? The owners found the dog. Yeah, and it got better, et cetera, et cetera, but it's just... It's just a mind-blowing form of demon possession.
Yeah, it's... We don't see it a lot here because we don't give it a lot of breath, but, boy, I mean...
Yeah, the reservation.
Yeah, even the reservations, but go to... The way I'm thinking about it is my worst experiences in my life were in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Where the headhunters.
Isn't Haiti a lot like that too?
Yeah, but Haiti is sort of expected because you know, the headhunters are not, I mean, that's a satanic thing. I mean, it's not, the huts are the, they love light. And I was out in the middle of
this tall,
damn plant. I mean,
we need that
head.
Keep reminding me of that Far Side cartoon where it says Professor Jenkins stepped out of the forest and into headhunter lore forever, and it's this guy with his huge head. And the headhunters are like, alright.
Wow, look at that. The mother-loon.
Yeah.
Anybody? Anything else?